You've got Jackson Snyder Presents on Hebrew Nation Radio. Don't have time for a big introduction, but this is number 12 in the series on hearing voices. This section has to do with the probation, that is probing to see if we or someone else has some kind of demonic infestation. And if you'll look in the podcast notes, there'll be a link there with my personal list that you may use as you go through this recording. My hope for you is that you are blessed and set free. Hallelujah.
Why self-deliverance? Because I need it right now, and because we all need to have a periodic check on ourselves to see how we're doing in this area. It seems like so many problems that might be spiritually oriented can come upon us slowly enough that we just don't perceive it until we get to a place where we are in some way bound. And that could be a strong or a weak bondage. If it's weak, then this is something we can do to work through it. I need it. What's happened to me is lethargy, sleepiness, difficulty getting motivated. And it feels like this has crept upon me over the last few months. Last year was a difficult year for me, a number of hospitalizations and physical problems. Right now, I'm suffering from a pretty bad toothache. I can't get dental help because dentists are afraid of working on me for fear that tooth root heart connection might in some way kick in and cause more problems. So what I need is to find a dentist that will work on me. So if you're praying, you might also pray for that Yahweh would make an entryway for me to get in and get professional aid on this. I have even been looking at the various set suppliers in my small collection to think of what to do about this. Yesterday it was very bad. Today it's manageable. There are some things that I considered are absolutely necessary before we get into this. One is attitude. We have to be willing to set aside the time to do it. Because sometimes this is not just a matter of a few simple prayers, as some say. If you probe and you find something there, chances are you're going to have to work at it. So besides setting apart the time, there's this matter of willpower. We've got to want to do this. We've got to strengthen our own desire to get this done and to get it done right so we're unhampered by whatever it is that has come. Willpower. And then coming along with willpower or belief, as the one heathen said, I believe, help my unbelief. Believe. When we get into academics, a lot of times we get away from the spiritual power aspects of being in the faith that we are. And our belief will sometimes suffer. Now, of course, in the academic world, there is this huge question that has come to the fore. That is, did Yahshua even exist? Do we have enough evidence from history to help our unbelief when it comes to his very existence or his very purpose in life? One of the remedies for this, I believe, is that we not consider so much the historicity at this point, but how has this person intersected our lives? How has, might I say, he changed our lives in such a way as to give us the faith to believe? That's the next aspect. From belief comes faith. We can, if we go just on a historical level, we find ourselves in doubt. But if we come down to a personal level, what has he done? What evidences has he given to me? What types of special revelation have I received? Then we can build our belief and thus our faith. And you all know what the definition of faith is according to the scripture, Hebrews chapter 11, 1. And one evangelist actually just doesn't call it faith, but now faith, the ability to believe for something that should happen or you desire to happen as though it already happened. And we find a word in Hebrew that equates with this kind of faith, and that is tauda, often translated thanks or thanksgiving. But it's also a hand-arm position for praise that says, I believe it, even though I have not received it yet. I'm going to believe by my own willpower that it is on the way, and not only on the way, but here. The Tao Da position is this, hand in arm positions. We go from Tao Da, when we receive in the physical realm, we go from Tao Da to Halal, another word defined as or translated as praise in the Hebrew scriptures. Oh, we're having a little trouble here. Excuse me. Kay, I don't think we want to just look at you all day. I don't know what's wrong with that. But anyway, I can't get the speaker view up right now. Tao Da to Halal. The in-between praise position is Yada, arms outstretched. Tao Da, Yada to Halal. In so many reliefs, bas reliefs from the earliest times of the Gentile faith, we see figures that are in the Halal position. And again, like I said, Tao Da, Yada, and Halal also designate, in Hebrew, faith positions or praise positions that were classically used in the old days to express from a body point of view where we are or want to be in our faith. Along with faith, belief, willpower, comes the preparation of a plan. We almost have to set aside in our minds a space for this. What do they call it? Compartmentalize. Set aside a space for this so we can see it in our minds. And the plan often comes from our imagining that it is happening. What's that going to look like? Chances are, if you imagine your plan for self-deliverance in a concentrated way, it will come out that way. And I might say also, we're not really seeking the deliverance. We're seeking to see, first of all, in a diagnostic sense, whether there's something there or not, which I'll come up with in just a moment. We need to have some secrecy as well, going over these things as quick as I can. We have to set aside the time and the plan in such a way as we're not going to be disturbed. Might want to start with an hour at this and see what happens, but the devil will send telephone calls, messages, people knocking at the door, etc., when we're trying to do this in order to disrupt our train of thought and our ability to praise, especially, you know, if your water's going to go off or something similar like that, that's the time when it's going to happen. And it's also a sign, if it does, that there is something there that you can overhaul. In fact, I don't think you'll ever have a time when there won't be something. There's going to be something afflicting you or tracking you. That's the devil's job and his lower demons, to track you, torment you, find ways in. I just praise Yah that we have Torah and we have the words and testimony of Yahshua to make us a lot less vulnerable to such things as that. Because the thing that the devil, I think, hates the most is to be finding himself a new nest that is a kadosh place, a kadosh, kadoshim, a holy of holies within the person's heart. Secrecy, a holy place. Sometimes you have room in your house to set apart a room for this, even if it would only be an hour. Chances are you're going to go on with it as well. Sometimes it would be best to find, if you possibly could, a place away from home, because demonic entities also have a tendency to select particular places. And especially if you've had a lot of hostility in your house or a lot of activity, maybe you could find a place where it's not so familiar to such things as that. And when you find that place, to consecrate it by prayer and using blessed objects and blessed elements to aid you in your quest for secrecy and alone time. And no time could be a better time than to ask in faith for discernment of spirits. Though this isn't a requirement for this kind of ministry, it certainly helps. Some people do have this gift in spades, but some people don't, like me. I'm too trusting, and I just have a hard time thinking that the devil can obsess anybody. But sure enough, the signs are that he certainly can. But I believe that a prayer for discernment, even on the short term, will bring you what you need for that time. Other things that are helpful in that place: consecrated books, small table, comfortable chair, and then the elementals or the sacramentals, the water, salt, oil, wine, and a cup, bread, even incense set apart, a recorder, some written liturgical prayers that have helped other people, paper towels, pure drinking water, and for some, music helps as well, if it's the right kind. I'm going to go over that again. Consecrated books, a small table and chair, water, salt, oil, wine, and a cup, unleavened bread, incense, recorder, liturgical prayers, paper towels, drinking water, and music. Although these things can also be hindrances, taking your attention away from what you're doing. But if you've got this planned well, they shouldn't be. And you may want to even begin with your own personal communion. That's a matter of your belief. But personally, I believe in the efficacy of blessed objects and blessed sacramental actions. Why? I'm not a Catholic. I'm not an Anglican. I'm an Essene. Because I've seen them to be extremely effective in the past, and especially the personal communion or the use of blessed, or as they say, holy water. Salt is also, in a spiritual sense, a purgative. Salt can go places that water and oil can't. Salt is also very effective if you need to have a demonic other to be relieved of their burden against you. Blessed salt, unbeknownst to that person in the bedroom or someplace where that one inhabits a lot, can do a lot, really can. As for the blessing of these things, I have papers to show you how to do a personal communion and what to say and exactly what to do. And also, I have papers on how to bless objects appropriately. But sometimes you'll want to get those from another source, because when we do it ourselves, especially when we have low self-esteem or the feeling that we lack spiritual power, we're going to feel the same way about our time in blessing these things, forgetting that it's not as much what we do as what the Almighty does in response to our prayers of blessing. So there are opportunities to obtain these elemental things, these sacramental elements, from another source. And even I would be happy to send you these things if you feel the low self-spiritual esteem, or you feel you're not in a position to be able to bless anything and lacking in faith that Yahweh will bless those things. There are some other acts or lack of acting that seem to be hindrances as well. If you're not properly baptized, whether Yahweh recognizes your baptism or not, we would hope so, but there may be that little part in the back of your mind that says, I haven't been baptized properly in the name of Yahshua as I've been instructed, or I never thought that I needed that. You do need it. Everybody needs to be rebaptized. That's anabaptism, baptized again. And this is something also that you can do yourself. When I was rebaptized, I had a man willing to drive 1,200 miles to do it. We went to a swimming pool at a hotel, and this man, who was a strong believer, a Hebraic believer, did baptisms for my wife and I and other people that were there that were looking for baptism. It's pretty hard for you to baptize others in the name of Yahshua when you haven't been baptized that way yourself. Not keeping the commandments is a hindrance. It's why a lot of Christians get some deliverance, but they go right back to it again because they've been taught that they don't have to keep commandments anymore. I'm talking about commandments like in the areas of giving, for instance. Many of our believers are chronically unlawful in the area of giving. They're stingy. They are depression-minded, not recognizing that they'll receive in the measure that they give. Or some have a false conception of love. In a Greek sense, I suppose in a Hebrew too, agape is not so much a love of fondness and attraction, that's eros, but a love that works, a love that works within compassion. Compassion being an agape in action. Sometimes love takes the form of brutality, almost. Oh, you could say that. Sometimes it does, because love has to be true. It has to be critical. It has to think on behalf of the benefit of the person that is loved rather than the fond feelings or attraction of that love. False conception of love can be turned around by just simply studying the word a little more. I'm thinking about not honoring the fourth commandment as well. In that commandment, there are two commandments, really. One is the rest, and that's what we often think about. Not so often thought about is the day of rest that hasn't changed for millennia. Thirdly, though, is what's required in that day. That is a set-apart convocation. You are required to be, if it's only you, or if only you and somebody else, to have a consecrated time together that day where the Spirit of Yahweh is in attendance with you. One area in which you can feel pretty sure there's something bugging you is if you feel that being in a service with like-minded people is either a waste of time or it's not attractive to you. You You're not attracted to it. You are, repelled by it. Yes, repelled by it. Or you can't stay awake in it. For me, going back to the Baptist church and visiting that I worked in for 5 years as a musician, I could not stay awake in there. I could sleep 3 days before, but I would go inside that building and I would start yawning. I would start getting hot and couldn't stand being there, even though I forced myself to go. Now, I don't know if this is because I didn't like it, or the devil that was helping me along didn't like it, or if I was just sleepy in there. I don't know, but there are so many people that I talk to that will not even go to a short meeting that's online for the sake of fulfilling that area of the commandment. And another area, I think, is what I've been calling Jehovahism, disrespect to the only one that can set you free, disrespect in name. I really do feel that we should not be prejudiced against people who use Jehovah or God or other things like that, or the Lord especially. But at the same time, now that we've been relieved of those falsehoods, to go right back into them again seems to be a way of humiliating the Father and the Creator of the universe. And I know that some people, on the other hand, in fact, one person that considers themselves a strong prophet, just the name Jesus, as the church gives it, is so abhorrent to that prophet that their animosity straight away goes toward the people that use it. We've had some seminars on this, and we've had people in our boot camps actually come and say, I cannot stand to hear that name, and I can't stand people who use that name. Why are they so ignorant or undisciplined? Well, chances are they just don't realize, and maybe chances are they're not supposed to. It's a problem I had that I now have gotten over, condemning others for their ignorance. I think I've gotten over it. With these things in mind, what we begin to do is simply to probe. After a time of praise, communion if you want, certainly praise out loud if you can, we begin to probe with the help of the Father. We ask the Spirit to come in presence into our time of fellowship with him, her, or it. We ask that the Spirit make itself known to us in the elements and the prayers and the things that we are using to devote the time with. Probing is exactly as the definition of the word probing is. That is to poking around, looking for things. There are definitely some words, some actions that the demonic, even at the lowest level, cannot stand. And one of those things, as Mark Rutland points out, is a person who does their best to remain in holiness, not only with what is generally defined as holiness, but scriptural holiness, which includes commandment keeping. They don't want to come in there. They're looking for a dirty little part inside. So we begin to probe with various utensils, which I'm about to talk about. The exorcist, this being yourself, opens the doors even wider to probe and see what is in there. There's no use to read out long lists of inappropriate feelings, you know, like a cult, spirit of infirmity, Jezebel spirit, depression spirit. You could go on and on forever. But there are a few triggers that will bring to your mind a reaction that is just not appropriate. Some of these things that bring adverse reactions are pretty simple. One that I just mentioned there is being in a service of normative religion. Why should that bother you? If there's nothing to it besides being bored or whatever, why should it bother you? It shouldn't. I have another one, Hebraic versus Greek thinking. For some people, Hebraic style thinking, especially concerning those hidden aspects of our personhood, soul, spirit, Greek thinking is so appropriated by people these days, we could call it Greek thinking, probably better to think of it as New Age thinking, that bringing up a more Hebraic understanding of these things, even with people who are Bible literate, will set them off. And we must remember that in this realm, cause and effect doesn't necessarily apply. There can be effects with no cause at all. We can't simply believe that something is happening to us or we're doing something. Well, what's the cause of this? There might not be any, as far as we're concerned. Or whatever did cause the effect that we're dealing with might have happened long before we were even born, or in the throes of departing the womb. I think the last time we talked about physical symptoms that are pretty obvious, but let's look at reactions. Outside of you, for instance, do you know people who are prophets? Do you know people who you know are consecrated to the faith? And when you're with them, all of a sudden, they start turning against you? Or those people you've been trying to minister to, that all of a sudden, they're turning against you? They won't hear you anymore? Kay had an amazing testimonial of that a few weeks ago when she talked about visiting a Bible study meeting, of all things, that didn't turn out to be a Bible study meeting at all, but a particular theology meeting. We can study as long as we stay within these particular bounds, and if you don't and you come back, you're just going to see a couple of us here, and we're going to ask you not to come back. I've been a victim of that. It's pretty obvious there. There's a problem with those people. But the question is for you, is there a problem with you? Have you gone overboard in something? Have you had an haughty spirit when you went into the presence of those people? Why are they turning against you? Well, it's obvious here in the case of Kay, I don't think anything she did was inappropriate, but the spirits in them did not like that. The truth caused a reaction. Take another option here. You have nothing to do with somebody placing a curse on you or putting a spell on you. And don't think that doesn't happen. It happens all the time. Just because it's not so outward these days, just because it's purloined in secret these days, there are people in your everyday life and even in the church and in your groups that'll put a curse or a spell on you. And sometimes they don't even know it. They just do. They don't have to be a witch or have any special powers. They just need to have a demon close by. And the demon is happy to take up on a curse. Oft times the result of being cursed is just feeling bad all the time. And this is what I think I'm dealing with here. I've gone through this myself, and I'm feeling like I've run into enough people in my life that were cursing people. I just think that I have been a victim of a curse, and some of these people have even told me so. But my naivete and my desire not to think that way has been a detriment to me. How about insulting? How personal do you take insults? How much of a spirit or feeling of rejection do you have? I have someone in my life right now that wants to insult me. And when he does, it is just like Jack in the Box. Jack popping out and doing it, then popping back in. I recognize it's not him. He probably can't even remember doing it. But something pops out. I have to insulate myself, or feeling like the victim all the time. In this culture, it is fad to play the victim. We've even got very popular victims organizations. Like, isn't that what Me Too is all about? I'm a victim. I'm a victim. I'm a victim. We need the spirit just to say to these victims, get over it. Get over it. It is not a strong or good thing to play the victim. Evidently, you've been able to pick yourself up, stand up by pulling on your own bootstraps, and go forward. To claim to be a victim at this point is a sure sign. Secret societies, one as innocent as, what is the women's organization with the Masons?
The Star something?
Yeah, Blue Star, that's an ointment.
Eastern Star.
Eastern Star, so innocent. One of the most demon oppressed groups that I can think of. Well, I can think of two. One's the Southern poverty, whatever that is. I'm having trouble with my memory tonight. I am being hindered here. So Southern something poverty something. That is the most biased and disorganized organization I've ever known. And take the Daughters of the American Revolution. I can remember that one. Infected with spirit of superiority and even violence. What about the Little Societies we're in, the Tupperware Club, the MLM Marketing Club? We got to look at who we're with. I recently went to the podcast festival, Podfest, in Orlando for a couple of days, and there was an offer to do a mastermind class.
You are listening to Jackson Snyder, www.yahad.me. Write me for a blessing. Amen.
And there was an offer to do a mastermind class where you pay so much money and you get to have frequent counseling and outings with a pair of experts in every area of life, and they will help you to navigate your life so you can have better finances and more successes. During that particular demonstration, which I attended simply because I was curious to see what this is all about, masterminds, they had four or five people up on the front podium sitting on chairs that were to give testimonies of this masterminding society's success in turning their lives around. And these people on the stage, even before they said anything, were disgusting to look at. They dressed in a disgusting fashion. A couple of them were homosexuals, extremely obese. And the message was, come and join us. Come and join us. I thought, I would have no desire to be with these heathens who are so concerned about their finances and trying to find a secret society that they had to pay $8,000 a year to be in so they could feel special, you know, such as this. Traveling is another thing. Pagan countries, places, you spent some time there. My father used to tell me, never bring anything home from Haiti. Everything's cursed. He was right. I want to tell you about a shocking event that happened at church. Not my church, but a lot of the churches in every area do this on Halloween. They have like a play in the church where they put together volunteers from the church membership, use a script, and put it on almost like a musical where they have in their show people who are victims of the devil and people who are evangelists trying to convince them to stop sinning. And for each of these examples, with the exception of one, at the end of their little vignette in the play, the floor comes open, flames come out, and demons grab them and pull them down into hell while they're screaming. Have you ever seen one of these plays? When I lived in Pensacola, they were very popular, very popular. The Baptist churches especially had them, Pentecostal churches. Well, I got a call from a woman in Tennessee. At that time, I was living in Alabama, and she needed some deliverance ministry. I said, what is wrong with you? She said, I went to one of these events one year at my church. That was a year and a half ago, 18 months ago, and I have not slept yet. The impression of being drugged down into hell so shocked me that I have not been able to sleep. And her husband said the same thing. She hasn't slept for 18 months. She was beside herself. And so my wife and I were there just for a couple of days. We did what we could do, and I lost track of that person. I wish I hadn't. But when we left, we can't say whether she got better or not. It was not enough time. Sometimes for something that serious, it takes more than just a half hour. A shocking event, and I'm sure you can think of more. Cursed objects, just the opposite of blessed objects in your house. I'm not advocating going in and taking all your trinkets out to the trash can, but even with regular ability of discernment, should be able to tell which of these things might have some influence on the atmosphere of the home or wherever they're at the office, and be willing to get rid of them if necessary. Burn them. When the fellow drove all that way to baptize my wife and I, he went through the house with a box, and he threw all kinds of stuff in that box and took it out and burned it. Now, were we worshiping those things, or did we feel like they were a hindrance to us? Not at all. Most were mementos from past times. But he said, you don't know where this has been, and besides, it's a graven image of something, whether you worship it or not. You don't know. You're better off without. And I thought, yes, but do you have to take everything? When a person is over-emotional, or they are with people who are over-emotional, like a hovering relative, or a feeling of being captivated in an invisible cage, or parents that are overreactive and constricting. Even though we're old people now, this influences us still. And on the other hand, a distant parent. I went into deliverance ministry in Jacksonville at Christian Healing Ministries because of a problem with a distant parent. I had an overwhelming fear of that parent. Not that he did anything so fearful, my father, but it appeared in my dreams all the time. He appeared as an ogre coming to get me. And I would often wake up in the middle of the night screaming about this. I went to get that taken care of. And it took a lot to get rid of it, too. But guess what? It's back. Even at this age, my father has been dead since 91. But still, this haunting childhood memory lingers on. I didn't see my father till I was 2 years old. He was overseas in the army. And when he came home, my mother said, I rejected him. So for the rest of his life, he rejected me. Was that the fault of a two-year-old? Can we ever blame a child for something like that? Yet, in my heart, I'm blaming myself. That has to go. How about poisoned associates? People around you, even close family, that seem to despise you, even if they admit that they love you, or they're just poisoned. They're bad people. I think of a relationship right now between a mother and a daughter. It's a poison relationship. The daughter hates the mother, but the mother will not give up and hasn't given up all these many years till now. She's 70 years old. And the main theme that runs through the back of her mind is, how can I be close to this daughter? You can't be. You can't be unless you are able to get rid of that demon and allow the Holy Spirit to work without your interference. We know about genetic ties. Looking back in our family lines, some people have been affected by ancestors that have been in secret societies or in wars or in addictions. There's also the case of womb trauma. For instance, one womb trauma is passive abortion. That is to say, somebody is aborted and you're the next pregnancy. If you don't think that there's a spirit that is waiting on you, check it again. In imaginary friends, in hostage to the devil. There's, I think, two cases there of imaginary friends that turn out later on when they're grown not to be so friendly. I'm sensitive to past humiliations. It's almost a plague. You think of things that humiliated you in the third grade, and just thinking about it brings back those humiliating feelings. There's something in there. There is, if nothing else, cognitive disassociation, some kind of brain hitch that needs to be healed and delivered. I knew of a kid that wet his pants in school in second grade. Why? Well, we talked about it. He was scared of the teacher. He was scared to ask her if he could go to the bathroom because she was a harsh teacher. And what happened to him? He had an accident there, and those kids humiliated him from that time until he got out of the 12th grade and he could go his own way. He was always known as the kid that peed his pants. Goes for bedwetters, too. Past humiliations. Sometimes the work environment is poisoned with poisonous people, irreligious people, people that have something and hate you under their mind, whether they act that way or not. I'm sure most of us have worked in such an environment as that. There's hardly anything worse. Observing something aberrant, like the young lady in church who saw the hell play. She saw that thing once, and it plagued her whole life. I hope she's delivered now. And then there are the false tongues and the false gifts and the false prophets, ever ready to give you a word. Now, there are true prophets. I know some. You know some. But false prophets hide in sheep's clothing to even lead astray men and women who have nothing else to do but to chase prophets around. Those are the list I made for those things that are outside of you. Inside, phobias, confusion, What causes me great confusion is being around confusing people. I call it mind meddling. Some people just bring an air of confusion with them where nobody can think straight. It's what I was feeling at the beginning of this, confusion. And of course, unforgiveness. There are people I have hated. Thank you, Father, I hate them no more. Time can heal these things unless the wounds are spiritual. They did something to you that affected your human spirit in such a way that it hasn't healed yet. Here's a big one, self-loathing that comes from rejection. You know that Bishop Daniel and Elder Staten have a new podcast that they're doing weekly called The Yetcast. It's at yetcast.org. Four of those interviews they did were with me on things like this. One of them was overcoming rejection. And I actually bought a little book to go through it so I could learn more about rejection. It's in the other room, but I've read about half of it. It's helpful to see that oftentimes our feelings of rejection and self-loathing are really our difficulty to understand other people and how other people's minds work. Occultism, the first encounter I had with a visible demon came because I got my hands on an occult book from an occult bookshop. And it wasn't long, I didn't get too far into that book before they started occurring. I think about those people. I know a couple people who they see these things visually. And in one case, since she was a very young girl, she's seen them. It affected her whole life. She had to learn to unsee them with the help of very simple prayers. Here's a sign from inside, a snide or altered voice that just pops out. That's not planned, but all of a sudden pops out. Snide remarks in an altered voice and the quick wit. That's one I have to deal with. Yahweh is slowing me down. Sometimes my quick wit has only been faster than my tongue in saying something that was extremely hurtful to somebody. And I think, why did I say that? That's called putting your foot in your mouth. And sometimes you don't even know it. There have been times when people said I said this or the other thing in recent memory that I could not remember at all. Was that me? Or was that something speaking through me? Inside you, relishing secret perversions. This is serious. Oftentimes, this takes more than self-deliverance. You need to find help. Where? That's a good question. Relishing secret perversions. Physical abuse or being a physical abuser. And the guilt that comes from one or the other. Or the guilt that comes from really anything. It was my fault. I caused this. But sometimes, what we're fretting over, the person that we supposedly insulted doesn't even remember it or didn't take it that way. Here's one that's not often mentioned, fanism. It's a kind of an idolatry when we take a celebrity and go nuts over that celebrity, try to emulate that celebrity. I signed up for an Instagram account yesterday, because I'm trying to get these podcasts out, and Instagram, you can do that. They suggested to me people to follow. The first one they suggested, picked out especially for me, was Kim Kardashian. What do I care about that? Another one was Occasional Cortez, Ocasio-Cortez, Occasional Cortex, you know, this 29-year-old politician. Why would that be a special pick for me? And a list of other people. I never heard of them. Oh, Justin Bieber. That would be the last person I would want to emulate. But what it tells me is that people, and I would think especially young people, are trying to emulate these demon-possessed characters, wanting to be like them, look like them, mold their bodies like them. I'm sure this has been the case all along. I remember reading about this with people that were living during the Second World War, celebrity magazines. My great aunt was a huge celebrity fan, and she loved John Kennedy to the point of idolatry. And somebody named Peter Lind Hayes, whoever that was, he's long gone. Manipulation. Seems like the manipulators, they will never admit to it. They never admit to it because often they don't even know they're doing it. Their strings are being pulled. The reason I'm reading all these off is because these may be things that we need to consider in our probing. We're probing for these things. And it's not enough just to say, no, that's not me. Think about it. Those who are emotionally open or emotionally closed. There's a little test that's easy to do that you can find out where you are on the open-closed scale. If we're emotionally closed, that can cause guilt. If we're too emotionally open, That can cause manipulation. And then there are addictions of any type, compulsions as well. And today, pornography, fantasy, dream life, desires, money in the Christian realm, word of faith, definitely. Get what you can take. You can't take it with you. Hypochondria. Certain medications can open up portals, especially if that medication is abused. Forbidden sexual experiences. Might even be something, some experience that you've had that you have a compulsion to go back to it and go back to it in your mind. That can be dealt with and broken. Mental murder. And that goes with any kind of commandment breaking, whether you do it or you're thinking about it. I think one in particular that's hard for me is stealing. Well, if you can't pay your bills and you can't find a way, and Yahweh is not providing for that, in a very real way, aren't you stealing? Even somebody that's working, taking some pens home, or worse, to take some money home. You might get caught. I know a woman here, just got out of prison, took a little money from work and ended up in prison 6 years, right here. Bigotry, prejudice against racism, sexism, communism, ungodly politics, ungodly thoughts, chronic depression. I'm writing these down for me. Just thought I'd share them with you. I've got just a few more. I've got this on a paper too, by the way, if you want to go through it yourself. Things that are on you. Cosmetics. Why cosmetics? Because I feel like some of these cosmetics are cursed. My wife wanted to go have her nails done and get artificial nails. Bless her soul. I said, be careful with who you pick to do that. I hope I didn't prime the pump here. But when she got back, her nails were driving her crazy. I said, it'll work out. Just wait a while. She waited a while. By the next day, she was going nuts with these nails. She was sure that this Oriental nail stylist had imparted something to her hands. It was terrible for her. And it turned out that that was the case because we worked prayer on that and we commanded that to go out. And within the course of the prayer, all that anxiety from that went and she was all right. But something was imparted there. Tattoos, piercings, cuttings. I knew a woman that had a death's head, a large death's head, tattooed on her rear end. No, I didn't see it. This is what I was told. Then when she got converted, because she was so ashamed of herself, that thing was too big to take off, so they put another one over top of it, a tattoo of a gardenia or something like that, that would fit on top of that. Best not to get it in the first place. You don't know who's putting it on. Some of those people are really rough. Certain locations, like I mentioned in that one church, I can't stay awake. Forget it. It's the location. Some places that we go to, maybe in the longstanding houses of some of our family members. We just don't feel like we should be there, or we feel aloof. Then on you, constant fatigue, pain, disease. That's me. I got to get to the bottom of this. Religious hobbyism or dabbling in spiritism, occult dabbling. So we've talked before, even something as innocent as a Ouija board. First using that, as I mentioned before, the demon Ouija manifested for us 12-year-olds, told us all kinds of things. I hope that monster's not still around here. Sleepiness, sleeplessness, sleeping spirit, lethargy, and alliances with sinners, like the masterminds. I want nothing to do with heathens, no matter how successful or how societal they are. I've realized it's no use for me to try to get in secular organizations like the local orchestras here. It's no use. Your spirit doesn't mix with them anymore. They're spiritless humans, unless you've got the gift of evangelism. And if you don't, if you're hurt easy, best thing to do is find a better group. Now, here's just a few more that are not in you or on you, but perhaps of you. A sudden outbursting. You have a tendency to just blow off, then hardly even know what you said. I take that kind of abuse here. Stealing, lying, covetous, jealousy. My missionary great aunt, oh, Jackie, jealousy is the most terrible thing you can have. Divorce in this country, had we only Hebrew marriage here, we wouldn't have this problem. But divorce can destroy you for years. But one thing that's much worse than divorce is marital strife, especially abuse. You know, in the Hebrew way of marriage, the couple live together in the house of the groom's father for a year. in the mansion, a built-on addition to the house. Did they have sexual relations? Well, maybe they weren't supposed to, but I'm sure they did. I can't imagine now going into a marriage as a young person without that. You don't even know who the person is. Let's be practical. Let's be practical. I don't know what's worse, fornication or being legally state married to someone that you don't know until later. Sociopathy, stunted emotions, emotional distance. I'm making a lot of confessions tonight. The need for skin to skin, or feeling disturbed about skin to skin, not wanting to be touched. There's got to be underlying problems with both. Dependence, dependent personality disorder, the rest of the mental disorders, borderline, bipolar, sexual fantasies, often based on either what is seen in pornographic sketches or something that is experienced much earlier in life. Power fantasies, slave master fantasy. It's like opening a dam. The opening gets larger and larger and larger, and that goes for desiring to be a member of a particular clique or a particular club. What has the spiritual, those who are living, have to do with the dead? We should form clubs if we need them. Here's one that is very prevalent right now: the supporting and evangelizing for obvious hoaxes, money schemes, social media events. I talk occasionally to the Philippines. There's a money scheme going there where after 3 months you put 10,000 in, you're going to get 30,000 back. But the condition is you never take that 10,000 out. People are going for this all over the place. They're not thinking, where is all that money coming from? This is a Christian organization, a church that's doing this scheme. Perhaps you've fell for one of these before. They eventually fall apart because they run out of other people's money. But if you get in at the beginning, I think you could call that theft. And then irrationality or panic attacks. A lot of people use lorazepam. That's good. That's better than the panic attack. But it would be better, if possible, to get to the very root of this. But remember, we're probing. And what comes after this is confessions and absolutions. You can confess to your blue in the face. It's good to confess to another person if you can find one that you can trust. That is not easy. Probably best is a stranger, actually. A professional confessor. Some years ago, they were talking about bringing the confessional back to the United Methodist Church. I thought that is great, except they would have to be a lot more careful about who they put in pastoral roles, if that can be the case. Already, gossip is the death of churches like that. But the absolution is absolutely necessary. Confession, what good is that? And who is it that can absolve you from these things and set you free? There's one confessor and one forgiver. Now you know who those are. And that concludes this presentation. Those are the things I'm going to be looking for myself. You can take away or add from that Southern Poverty Law Center. Yes. You can use that salt, bless it, or get it blessed. Throw it around. You can use it also. I almost sound stupid saying this, but as a hedge, say around your bed, especially if you've got an incubus that comes after you at night, burning safe. If it's got something in it, decommission it. That's all. And you could, if you feel bad about that, send whatever it is when you burn it to the feet of Yahshua for him to do it as he will. Do I think they know they are false prophets? Sometimes, but not generally. Prophetic personality type is aggressive and assertive anyway. Most prophets are going to be aggressive and assertive anyway. Most. Get the prophecy. If somebody's got it for you, don't accept it. Write it down. See what happens. If it doesn't come to pass, then no, they're not a true prophet. And if it's bad on you, break the curse. Oh, yes. Here's the link to the rejection podcast. Psychotropic medications. Yes. Divorce is a good thing. State divorce is a horrible thing. There should be Hebraic marriage in the first place. If that was the case, that would alleviate so much, because divorce sometimes is impossible.
Hey, Jack?
Yeah.
There are some people I know, some of them are family, they kind of joke about divorce. And then there are some people that are friends that do the same thing. That is not a joking matter.
Absolutely not.
I mean, you don't just talk about divorce and say, well, we might just get divorced, or we're just roommates. No, that's not cool at all.
You're roommates with someone, you're married to them, but you're married illicitly. You're married illicitly. You have not gone through what's required. Granted, there's not much required in a Hebraic marriage. However, you do a state marriage, you know, the state license in the first place was to see how many couples were interracial. That was the prime reason for marriage license in the first place. Try to get out of one. If you've been divorced, your children are ruined, your life is ruined, your finances are ruined, your reputation is ruined, your family is ruined, your extended family is ruined. It's the state marriage system. Yahweh gave us a system for divorce, for the hardness of our hearts, because we're not intelligent enough emotionally sometimes to overcome the chemistry of marriage, to get down to the spirituality or emotionality of marriage or behavior. And so it's not that we're hard of hearts that we want to fight each other. That's not it. We're dense. We don't know what is going to come up. Unless, of course, I was advised that I really needed to be, engaged to somebody at my age for 5 years. You've got to be kidding. I'm lucky to have 5 years left. You trust in the Father, but you make good decisions in the first place. And in marriage counseling, when I did that in the church, for people that were already married, as many times as not, I suggested they get divorced because they are making each other's lives miserable and making ways for the devil that he would never have. But just as many that I suggested that they become spiritual, that they come into the kingdom, step their foot in the water, see if that doesn't ameliorate their problems. And it would.
Time to say goodnight from Jackson Snyder Presents Yahad.me.